station promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Guy Who's Turning Into His Father.
Mr. Guy Who's Turning Into His Father.
When you were a kid, you swore you'd never turn out like your old man. But now that you have kids, it turns out you swear just like your old man.
You lousy kids, clean up this.
Sure, you want your kids to think you're hip and happening, but still find yourself screaming, "Turn down that awful jungle music for crying out loud!"
And you don't care how you dress.
You've had that members-only jacket for 25 years.
Even the Goodwill doesn't want it.
So the next time you find yourself saying, "Back in the good old days," or "This must be the new man," look in the mirror, ignore your nose hair, and say hello to Mr. Guy Who's Turning Into His Father, a real American hero.
Mr. Guy is turning into his father.
Come here, boy. Pull my finger.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio, get ready for Sam and Kara in the Morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to Wednesday, July 21st. We're back in the studio live, awake and ready to provide you with a nice radio program.
That was beautiful and well put, like a little thing. Anytime I move the mic, I get a look from Sam.
No, I was looking at you anyway.
I know, it's just funny. I can see it coming. Anytime the mic moves, he's like... looks.
Yeah.
I'm rocking a cup of Starbucks this morning.
Oh,
I'm
you
a little
had time
sleep.
For Starbucks?
I'm a little sleepy today.
Yeah. Why are you sleepy? Did you go to sleep late?
You know, just some days are just a little bit more rugged than others. But I'm a morning person, so usually mornings aren't bad for me. But sometimes, you know, it's just getting it going, getting it together.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. You know, this morning I was awakened by the gardeners with their machines.
With their machines.
And I don't appreciate that very much, you know? I feel like I just want to go down there and bitch slap them, you know? what the fuck are you thinking, you know?
That's really funny, Sam.
Yeah.
I think it's so funny when you get all worked up. It's really funny because it's not the way I see you.
Uh-huh.
So when you start going off on somebody, I just laugh so hard.
Yeah, no, I go off quite a bit, actually.
What would you do? Would you really go down there and give them a what for?
Well, you know, I mean, considering the consequences would not be very good, I don't think I'm going to do that, but I feel like doing it.
Okay.
You know, on the inside.
Well,
I mean, verbally,
can you tell them to quit? Or you pretty much need to call their company and tell them they're starting too early. What time does it go off?
7:30, quarter to 8, or something like that, you know?
Don't they know this LA and that we don't start work until 11?
They don't give
11?
A shit, you know? I mean, when we went to San Diego, we were at a resort. And Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, they start mowing the lawn.
That's called I Want My Money Back.
This is a fucking resort.
No, that's called I would go to town with that. I would go to town.
Yeah.
I said, I'm sorry, I'm getting I'm going to have woken up at what time?
Mm-hmm.
I came and paid money to be here to get to wake up at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Refund.
Yeah. But anyway, we were thinking of going there again. It's in San Diego.
Oh, that's funny. And we're going to go there again. Really?
Yeah.
What is the name of the resort?
But, you know,
what resort is it?
It's called Paradise Point.
Oh, that
it's
sounds
like,
beautiful.
Mission Bay. Yeah, it's kind of like a Hawaiian village.
Can you just tell them to, like,
really
keep
cool.
the gardeners away from you guys?
We could, yeah. But the problem is we're not going to go there because the rooms are very expensive. You know, now is tourism season, so...
Oh, what are they running?
All the prices, like, double and triple, you know?
Is it like... Is it
it's like 400 and something a night,
really,
you know?
Versus normally 2-something?
Yeah, 200, 230, you know? So, you know, I mean, even 200 is a lot of money, but you figure...
But that's
getting,
a nice hotel. I mean,
you're
that's
a resort,
standard.
You know, private beach.
Two-something a night
stuff,
is
you know?
Standard for a nice hotel.
Right.
And that's not being super, super high-end,
yeah.
but that's a nice hotel.
Yeah. But there's no way I'm paying $400, you know.
Just not for San Diego. I mean, that's what you pay when you go.
Not for anywhere, you know.
But if you're on some, like, you know, destination vacation where you're, you know, you're on some exotic place and you're doing it one time, you might do that.
Yeah, maybe.
No?
No.
What if you had the money?
No. Well, if I had the money, it's a different question altogether.
See, I look at you and I'm like, that's this dude, in my brain, I think you're like a secret millionaire.
I wish.
Really?
I wish.
I look at you like you're some secret millionaire that's like trying to act like he's broke, but he's not really broke.
Why would I try to act like that?
Because there's people that do that. They try to. It's like a mentality.
Yeah.
Broke.
No, I would be proud of it if I had a lot of money.
A while back.
But the plan is, that is the plan, to have a lot of money for my retirement.
Yeah.
I'm getting close.
Are you?
15 years. Right?
Oh, you need 15
retirement
years?
Is 65, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I would like to retire before that.
But are you one of these people...
But I don't
people...
know what I would do anyway.
No, that's my point. Like, are you one of these people that if you always think about, well, when I can retire, that's when life starts?
No, not really. Not at all.
Because there's people like that. They live for retirement.
I know. And unfortunately, I don't. I should, you know?
No,
I mean,
you
save
shouldn't.
Save some money and shit, you know?
Bull crap.
Who wants to work at that age, you know?
It's called... It's, you know, people that work live longer.
Yeah, no, I mean, work is one thing, but...
And you love what you do.
But struggling for money still at that age is kind of sucks, you know?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, what's the point of your life doesn't start till then? And there's people that are like, oh, once are we hit our retirement? I'm like, you're going to be ugly, old.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not
you're not even going to have fun. You're going to have money. You may be cool enough to actually go on a vacation, and you get there. You can't even enjoy yourself. I just think that, you know, life starts today. It's not in the future, and you never know what you're going to live for, how long you're going to live.
No, I mean, that's true. If I'd saved some money now, I would have quite a bit, but I prefer to live for the day. For the most part, you know, I mean, yes, plan a little for the future.
And a lot of people that hit retirement end up going back into working, too, because they're,
you know,
like, going straight.
But sometimes they don't even get to that age, you know, and then they missed out their whole life, you know.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I'm serious. speaking of, this is, well, it's two side notes. One, I went on a date a while back. This is a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
With a guy, first date, first conversation, we start talking about, I don't know how we got on the topic of poverty. Mm-hmm. And I said, poverty can be a state of mind, meaning it's a mentality, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He totally changed and looked at me and goes, have you ever been poor?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, relatively speaking, growing up, I could say, yeah. I mean, we weren't dirt poor, but we definitely had to go without. And there were some things that, you know, we should have had that we didn't have as kids. But I have a pretty sober outlook on it that, you know, poor is a relative term. So for some people, you know, not having any food, or some people just not having good clothes, it's all relative, you know. So I said, in some ways, yeah, we had to go out without, but I wouldn't say we were poor. He goes, well, he got so mad. We're like 10 minutes into the date and this guy is mad. And I thought, this is the time when you look at yourself and go, why did I start this conversation? Because he doesn't know me. He doesn't know that I care about people yet. He doesn't know that I'm not some self-righteous, you know, screw the poor man type person. He just thinks, you know what I mean? When somebody doesn't know you and you start into a heavy conversation, so they don't know your heart and they hear what you're saying and they're already like, they're judging you like this person. He said we ended up getting past it and we had a great conversation and he ended up really liking me. But he said that he thought he almost walked out.
Yeah. Why? Did it hit him like below the belt?
Apparently his mom struggled as a single mom and they had a really, really rough childhood. And so for me to say something like it's a mentality sounded too trite for something he went through.
Yeah.
But really, you know, I was looking at it very objectively and not in his life because I don't know his life.
Right.
But what I was referring to is the town that I grew up in and a lot of people that my dad was friends with and everything. People are fine with status quo. They're not trying to better their future. It's just get by. And even mediocrity can be a state of mind. It's like, you know, I know for me and my brother, like, we didn't have a lot of money at all growing up. So my brother does really well for himself. I mean, it's ridiculous how much he makes for his age.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it still got to the point where at times his lights would almost get shut off and his car note would be 3 months behind. And he makes well into the six figures, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or five figures, whatever it is called. And the up there figures. Anyway, but I would ask him, like, I'm like, why is this still happening? Like, why don't you just pay these things, you know? Mm-hmm. And he goes, I don't know why I don't do it. But it's it's kind of a mentality of you're afraid you're going to go broke. Mm-hmm. And he had so much money.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, like, poverty can be something that's passed down just in the way you see life you know, versus your circumstance.
I'm sure it has something to do with
yeah.
your head, you know.
I mean, but, and there is legitimate poverty. I'm not saying that it's something you make up in your brain. I'm just saying if you've lived in a certain environment your whole life, it's going to give you an outlook on life and how you view money and how you view success and what you think you're capable of and what possibilities are.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with mediocrity. Like the way I grew up, nobody talked to us about college. They didn't act like we should go to college or that we deserve to go to college. And the idea that, I mean, I remember being in high school and kind of talking about things I wanted to do after high school, and it almost offended my stepmom and my dad because it was like, well, who do you think you are? We're not going to help you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't want to be a freaking bum my whole life, you know?
Yeah. That's a terrible way to grow up.
It is. It's weird. I mean, I always think there's always somebody that has it a lot worse, and so I don't do like a boo-hoo story because I know people that had it a lot worse. But
yeah.
I'm just saying like mediocrity and poverty, if it's your real circumstance, can infiltrate the way people see their possibilities.
Right.
And
right.
I know that because even in my adult life, there's things that I have to remember, oh, I can do this. This is possible because there's mental blocks sometimes,
right,
you
right.
know?
Yeah, but there's still a lot of things you can't do, you know, and
that you can or can't.
You can't.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well,
well, I'm not in a situation where I can do everything. I don't have
yeah,
the resources, but I'm
yeah.
saying mentally, I can go, well, this is possible.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a plan and you work hard, or you know, if it's the plan you're supposed to do, you can. Anything's possible. That's what we have to dwell in. You know, Emily Dickinson said, "I dwell on possibility," and there's something beautiful about knowing that. Who knows where you're going to really be in life, but believing that anything can happen and that you don't deserve it anymore and you don't deserve it any less than anyone else.
Right, yeah.
And I think that opens up people's minds, you know?
Yeah. You know, but I mean, you think of like equal opportunity and stuff, and you'd like to think that it's like that, but you know, many people come from unfortunate backgrounds, and they're stuck in that
well,
state of mind.
Here's,
you know?
Oh, yeah, it's a state of mind, though.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the world is just. I'm not saying that there aren't real prejudice or real poverty or there aren't really bad circumstances. And I mean, I've hit walls in my life where I'm like, I just don't know how to get around this. This seems unfair. This seems like a raw deal. I don't know how to get this together. But I can't change the external of life. I can only change my attitude, my heart, and my mind. And in that, you never know what can actually open up, because when you change your heart and your mind, you might be more open to opportunities, or you may be looking at something from a more creative lens and see something you didn't see before.
Right. Yeah.
And again, so it's not like I'm saying these things don't exist. Of course they do. I mean, I lived in it growing up. But
yeah. And there are stories of people that grew up in poverty and really made it big.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's a great motivator, I think. And yeah, it depends where you're going
to
take it.
Yeah,
you know?
And I'm not to use myself as a success story, but I mean, compared to where I grew up, and the mentality was very much just, you know what, finish high school maybe. If you've got rich parents, you go on to college. If not, you don't go to college. You go work in a power plant and, you know, get married, have kids. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, there's none of this, like, go for anything big, you know. So the fact that I even left town was kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Well, our guest is calling. We have an author, so we're going to find out all about it this morning. And good morning. You're on the air with Sam and Kira. Go ahead. Okay, they're connecting us, I think. So that's a cool thing. And Christopher Wright, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Sam.
Yes, how you doing? I thought there was going to be someone on, you know, telling us they're connecting you, but I guess we got you straight. So good morning to you, and we're calling you about the your latest book called Rules of Betrayal. And we spoke to you last year when you came out with Rules of Vengeance, if you remember. And after that, Yeah, and I was so in love with the book, I went back and read your the earlier one, Rules of Deception, and now you came out with a new one, and I got to say that I've waited quite a bit with anticipation for the new book. So so tell us a little bit about this, about your hero, where he's going this time.
Sure. Well, the rule series centers around two people, Dr. Jonathan Ransom and his English wife, Emma. Dr. Ransom works for Doctors Without Borders, or he has in the past, where he travels around the world, you know, bringing health care and saving lives in the most difficult of circumstances in political hotspots in the war zones around the world. And working at his side is his lovely English wife, Emma, who, it turns out, as we learn in the first book, is not quite the devoted assistant that he thought. She actually has another agenda, and she's been using his postings as a doctor with Doctors Without Borders around the world to do her own work as a covert operative for an American intelligence agency called Division.
Right.
All right. Right. New on Rules of Betrayal opens up with Jonathan working on his own in Afghanistan, thinking he's free of Division and free of his wife, only to get kind of pulled right back into the thick of things when it's discovered his expertise is needed to help locate a cruise missile that was lost in the mountains of Pakistan some 25 years ago.
Yes.
And as he embarks on this adventure, he realizes that his wife, Emma, is kind of on the other side of this transaction, helping the bad guys get that bomb down.
Yeah. It's amazing how she always figures in somewhere in the story, you know? And I do want to focus on the first couple books took place in Europe. One involved a nuclear plant, and the other one involved shooting down a plane. And so how did they end up in Pakistan now?
Well, I write my books from the research I do. And, of course, I knew that at the end of Vengeance, Rules of Vengeance, Jonathan had to go off his own, get back to Lady Bess, which was just a minister to the kind of poor and people without health care, and just be a doctor, which is what really, turns him on. And then I learned about doing my research about the fact that over the years we had lost, our airports had lost, a few nuclear weapons and plane crashes, plane collisions, and things like that. And so I put on my author's cap and started wondering what would happen if we lost one in maybe the most volatile part of the world, and where would that be? That would be obviously the border between Pakistan and Afghanistan, which is a natural place for B-52s to have been flying some 25 years ago when the Russians were invading the country.
Right.
So there you go. That's how I got my idea.
Right. Now, that is definitely a flashpoint right now. Did you have to go to that area to really write about it?
Didn't have to, but that's the pleasure. One of the great things about being an espionage writer, writing this type of globe-spanning thrillers, is getting out of your chair, climbing onto a plane, and flying to those places where the book takes place. So this book, I was not in Afghanistan. I was, though, in Pakistan and Dubai and Tel Aviv, which is some of the other places where the story takes place, and back in Washington, where I always spend time interviewing some people in the intelligence community to really get my facts straight.
Right. And I would imagine these books take a lot of research and that. How long did it take to write this one, this book?
These books take me about a year to write. I try to research for 3 to 4 months and sit down at my desk and bang out the book in about 6 months after that.
Right.
But the more research you do, the easier these books are to write because you're putting in as much fact as you can, and the books tend to write themselves.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Yes, you say it writes itself, but I love the way you write. You know, I realized from the first book, you don't really waste any words, you know. It's like every word has to somehow move the plot, you know. And that's not something that any writer can say, because some books really start meandering and stuff, and then you kind of lose the story, you know. I wanted to ask you, if I recall, you were born in Tokyo, right?
I was born in Tokyo, lived there until I was 5, and grew up primarily in Los Angeles.
Right.
Son of a Swiss father, American mother, and then I went to go work in Europe after college.
Oh, wow. Did you get a chance to learn any Japanese at all?
I didn't speak English until I was 3. At the time, living in Japan, we had a baby maid, a kitchen maid, and a chauffeur who all spoke constantly to me in Japanese.
Uh-huh.
So, unfortunately, I don't recall any, but my parents and I spoke baby Japanese for the first 3 years and didn't, say mommy or daddy until I was 3.
Right.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, I was wondering is how come in your books you haven't figured in Japan yet into all of this? Is there any plan?
You have to wait. New one.
Oh,
new one I'm
wow.
writing now. It's the fourth rules. Actually, it begins in Mombasa in Africa, then quickly shifts and goes into Hong Kong and then into Singapore. So not Japan, but Hong Kong and Singapore, which is also a certain flashpoint for a lot of world shipping and a lot of the oil that goes into the Far East.
Right, right. Well, this is amazing. At least, like I said, I'm a big fan, and I want to tell everyone, go out and get Rules of Betrayal. The author is Christopher Reich. And I know your books before were bestsellers, and I'm sure this one is going to be just as well. To me, you're one of the great thriller writers out there. So we really appreciate your time this morning, and we want to wish
you
all the best with the book.
Congrats.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate the kind words. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Christopher.
You
take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. Like, sorry, I always wait for them to say bye, and sometimes they don't, so I just hang up and stuff. But this interview was mainly for me, you know. I mean,
I can tell, but that's okay.
I can tell.
I like that.
Well,
though.
Look, the thing is this: is that when you have fiction books, sometimes it's hard to carry a conversation because you have to read the story in order to understand it.
So how are people
it,
at
know?
Home going to get into it?
Well, they're going to get into it because I love the books and I recommend them and I give
you
a little
bit of
synopsis.
You read so damn much, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
How'd you get a life, Sam? Stop reading words.
Well, you know, that's the thing is that. The first year and a half when I ran the station, I had no time to read at all. It was like I started missing it so much, but I didn't have the time. So now, with help and stuff running the station, I do find time and I make time to read, you know. And Christopher Reich is definitely one of, you know, it's like I never heard of him before. And then we had an interview last year and I started reading the book. I didn't really have any intention of reading it. And I started reading, and it just drew me in so much that I went back and got the one that came out before that. And I thought, God, when is he going to come out with another one, you know? So it finally did. So for me, it's like a celebration, you know?
Yeah.
And besides, this show is about me, so shut up.
There you go. He said it himself, guys. I'm just decorative.
Yeah. But, I mean, isn't it cool to be born in Japan, you know? I mean, think
I don't know. I've
it,
never been
you
know? Born there, but I guess it would be kind of cool.
Yeah, you know, it's different.
Yeah, it's way different.
Yeah.
Now it's
I
kind
mean,
of its first
the
language.
I don't know how people can learn the language, though, man.
Yeah. It seems like a very tech, very, yeah, hard. I just, yeah. The only word I can think of is hard.
Yeah.
Alien-like, very different.
Yeah.
But then maybe they think that about us. I don't know.
Yeah. But you know what's cool about his book is it's, you know, it's like espionage, but the main character is not really an agent or anything. He's just, like he said, he's like a doctor, you know, and he goes around the world and helps people and things like that. And then he just gets involved in all this, you know.
And then he's got the crazy wife that always comes in the picture.
Yeah, you know, and it turns out that she is a secret agent.
And it sounds like they need to get some good marriage counseling, these two characters.
But I don't know. I grew to love the characters and this is cool, you know. I mean, he takes you to a lot of places, and I was glad to hear that in this one, he goes to Tel Aviv as well. So I'm sure I can relate to that a little
bit.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go to Tel Aviv.
Do you?
Yeah, meet some straight-up Israeli dudes.
Yeah, you'll meet some hot guys there. They really are hot, mm-hmm. you know, if I do say so myself.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you didn't think guys were hot.
Well, I don't, but, you know, my daughter opened up my eyes to that.
Oh, okay. Is she back?
Oh, yeah, she's been back.
Okay, how did she like it?
She loved it. Are you kidding? Yeah, and she goes, God, these Israeli guys are really hot, you know? And I said, okay.
You know, you're all proud.
Whatever. Whatever.
You're so proud. You're like, that's my homeland, and I'm Israeli.
Yeah.
You're like, yep, they are. I'm so glad you saw the light.
So you know what's the funny thing is every time I'm there, I start getting irritated with things, and then when I come back, I'm like, God, I had a lot of fun, you know?
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know, but it's like I miss it now, you know?
Yeah.
But I miss mainly being with my parents and stuff. You know, I mean, when you're younger and stuff, you don't really appreciate being with your parents. But then you grow older, and they grow older, and you realize, God, you know, I mean, it is a good time spending time with them.
Yeah.
You know, even when they grow older.
How old are they?
My dad is like, what, 77 or something, and my mom is, what is she like? She's going to turn 70 this year, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, you know?
Like, my aunt's in her 50s now, and I just am like, what are you doing to me? I'm like, you're not allowed to get older.
Yeah.
It's so weird that she's in her 50s.
And I know it's funny how you look at 50s as old.
Well,
know?
I don't even
but
think.
But it is.
But, well,
know?
Here, let me explain something.
It is.
People, I don't know what it is, but people that aren't in L.A. or New York, probably just L.A. because it's just so self-image conscious.
Uh-huh.
People maintain their looks better here for a long time because it's so damn vain, mm-hmm. you know. People are like, so I've dated people that are close to 50 years old, but to be honest, that look really great and vital and youthful for their age
right.
and distinguished. But back in where I've come from and like family members and stuff that are that age bracket, I'm like,
yeah,
what the hell is your problem?
They don't age very well.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, my aunt, she's like letting her hair grow gray, and I'm like, no. I mean, she's gone back to like coloring it, but I'm like, no, don't let it gray. You're only 50 something years old.
Yeah.
You look fine. I mean, you're beautiful. Like, just work it out, you know?
Yeah.
Do what you gotta do.
Do what you gotta do.
I know. It kind of pisses me off, actually. Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't care anymore. No, you do care.
Yeah.
Stop.
I know, gray doesn't look that great on women, huh?
You know, I don't know. I don't really.
for the most part. I mean, some of them actually look good, you know.
Yeah, I would say so. I think like Paula Deen.
Your hairdo.
Paula Deen's hair is like white now, but in a little silver. And she's older, you know. Yeah. She's like the grandma that cooks, but she's so cute and vivacious. And
I don't know who she is.
Paula Deen?
Yeah.
Hey, y'all. How y'all doing out there? Paula Deen.
Paula Deen. What does she
do? We're going to make a cupcake casserole right now. I know what you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Cupcakes are bad for you, but really, it's a casserole.
Yeah. So she's like a Julia Child sort of a thing?
She's Southern. She cooks with pounds of butter, and she has no apologies. She's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Her food looks fun, but it's really who she is that is hysterical. Because she's so full of love and life, and she's cooking you up a big homemade hug. Yeah. I mean, everything's just, okay, y'all, well, what we going to do here now is take 5 pounds of butter. I just love butter. I probably ate a whole stick by myself last night. She says stuff like that, though. I'm not making it up. She'll be like, I just sometimes can eat butter. Like, she'll say stuff like that. She's hysterical.
Yeah.
And she's so beautiful, and she's got so much light coming out of her. You know, when some people just love life and you can see it.
Where do you find her? Like in the Food Network?
She's on the Food Network. Yeah.
Oh.
Really, really, really funny.
Sounds really boring to me to watch that.
Well, she's really entertaining.
I guess if people are into cooking.
She's really entertaining,
right?
And her food is Southern, so I like kind of watching it for some tips. But most of the shows are, I think those shows are pretty good. But do I like cooking, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't sit there for hours.
See, that's the thing. Now, let me ask you, I mean, can you, like, learn how to cook by watching it on TV?
You can learn a lot, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You can learn a lot. Just like if you're reading a book, if you're reading a cookbook and you're making the ingredients, you can do the same thing with watching it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes if you're a visual learner, it's great, too, because you see how it's done.
Yeah. But what's interesting is often the food doesn't come out the same, huh? Like in a recipe book.
Well, I think that if you're baking, it does have to be precise. Mm-hmm. You can't wing it. Whereas if you're cooking, it doesn't have to be precise. And so I'm actually a better cook than a baker because I like to free flow when I cook and just taste it as I go. Mm-hmm. And I hate following directions. I hate having to go back and measure shit. So baking, I'm really a bad baker.
Mm-hmm.
I still do it.
Yeah.
It always looks like a 3-year-old made a cake. But it's fun. I like baking a lot because it's fun. It's kind of like arts and crafts for me.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you make something, try to make it look pretty. And 9 times out of 10, it looks like shit. Mm. Although last week I made cookies from scratch, these sugar cookies. And then I made my own caramel, you know, in a pan, and you brown the sugar and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I drizzled it on the cookies and let them cool. And they were really good. They looked cute, too. They had like a little stripe of caramel on them. Gave them to friends.
Sounds good. How come you don't bring any of them in here?
I mean, they didn't last long, Sam. I mean, it was like I gave six
here.
That's
okay. You can bring us a couple.
I could have.
Yeah. Because I want to judge your baking skills.
You just like to judge everything about me. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, I'll bring something really... I used to make tons of tiramisu. Do you like tiramisu?
Oh, I love tiramisu.
I used to make that all the time.
Really?
Yeah, and then I like got sick of it. I almost threw up on it. So you know when you like overdo something?
Yeah, you don't want to eat too much of anything.
Yeah, my aunt and I made brownies one year. It was around Christmas, and we were like, oh, let's put mint in it and make it like mint brownies. Well, we made a big batch, and then we're like, it doesn't taste minty enough, and we put like the whole thing of mint in there.
Uh-huh.
And we had these brownies, and they tasted like shit. And they were nothing but ice cold mint, and they were really sweet. And we ended up throwing away. And to this day, we just laugh about mint brownies.
Really?
Yeah, a bunch of dorks though, know how to cook. You know?
Yeah.
So I was watching a documentary last night on HBO with my roommates, and it was about the lottery, and just the stories of the people that play, the odds. The characters, the people that won, their life before and after.
Yeah.
The odds of winning a lottery are like, it's not the exact figure, but it's close. It's one. What do you think the odds are?
It's like 1 in 14 million or something, right?
Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
It's like 1 in 190 something million.
Oh, okay, because they got more numbers there now or something. I remember when it was like 0 to 49.
It's like almost 200 million. 1 in 200 million.
Right.
Isn't that a lot. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Well, the people that there's these different towns that they go to, and they watch the line, just people just play the lottery. Mm-hmm. And one woman, I mean, she spends so much money daily on buying lottery tickets, and she goes into her the way she plays the lottery and da 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 da. And a few times she's won a few thousand here and there, but she's never hit it big.
Right. Yeah.
But she keeps playing, and her sister says, you know, I have a 401k and a retirement plan, and she plays the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady's like, she's really sweet. She's like, well, you know, I'm going to play this lottery. I'm not saying that God approves of it. He probably don't approve of me gambling. But I'm going to play the lottery anyway because I'm going to win. Mm. And she's just going on about her plan to win. But the more you hear her talk, it's like an addiction.
Right.
You've got to play. And she does it
multiple
times a day.
And amazingly,
it's just like gambling. It's just like gambling addictions.
Yeah. And amazingly, most people that play this cannot really afford to, you know. But they really have the dreams and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I think some people criticized it as taking advantage of people that are poor, you know.
Well, I mean,
or have less means.
Well, there's a lot of people that play for fun, and that you know they showed this one couple that won one of the largest Powerballs, you know, which was like $100 million or something like that.
Wow.
One of the largest, you know, jackpots or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they said, we rarely play. They're like, we barely buy a ticket, but it was the big one, and everybody was doing it. So we were going to go get a lottery ticket, and the place that we went to was closed. And so on the way home, we dropped by a different place.
Mm-hmm.
They never play the lottery, and they won.
Yeah.
And there's people that do it for fun, and I don't think you blame the lottery. It's the person that has the issue. If they're going to blow their money and be irresponsible, they're just going to be that way anyway.
Right.
But there are a lot of people that play, and it's kind of like, It's exciting and gives them something to look forward to because there's not anything going on in the town.
Mm-hmm.
But it talks about how much yearly Americans spend on movies, how much yearly they spend on books, and then it says how much yearly they spend on lottery tickets, and lottery's the number one.
Really?
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
And then some of the people that won the lottery, mm-hmm. You know, some were very philanthropic and did stuff with it. Some people... they bought new homes, things like that.
Right. But I've read up on this, and I came out of this with is that many people just go back to the way they were. You know, they spend much of their money because they don't know how to manage it,
mm-hmm.
and they go back to the way they used to be. You know, which is amazing to me when you've given that kind of an opportunity.
Well,
to lose it all.
It was interesting because there's a lot of different winners that they followed. What I did notice is that one of the men that won, his wife divorced him. I guess she took half or something. I'm not sure how that worked.
Mm-hmm.
She divorced him. And he said, prior to winning, you have these fantasies about having a Lamborghini and living in the south of France and all these different things. And he said, when you win and you're trying to maintain the same area of where you're living, he's like, the fantasies go away. You don't want those things anymore. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's weird. I don't get it. He was very philanthropic, though, which was beautiful. Some people, I was like, why did you even win if you're not going to do anything with it? I mean, whether it's for someone else or yourself,
mm-hmm.
why have it just sit there? But a lot of people did improve their level of living, like this Vietnamese couple that were like first-generation Vietnamese. They worked at a meat processing plant mm-hmm. in Nebraska, of all places, and they won. And he is the sweetest little man. He loves his family.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up building his own community with a big gate around it, which was a house for all his people and his family.
Yeah.
And they all lived near each other. And then he went back to Vietnam to help out his family.
Yeah.
And he talks about, you know...
See, with that kind of money, you really want to help out other people.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, he really...
You can't possibly spend that kind of money, you know?
That's what I'm thinking. So he went back to Vietnam and helped out his family. It was really a touching story because he said his hardest thing in life to do was I had to leave my parents behind in a really bad situation, but I had to do that for the hope and future of my children. And he said that was agonizing.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to go back and reconcile and help out his family and extended family there. It was a really beautiful story. But what was interesting is this couple that never plays the lottery won. And she said, there's been many times, and this is going to sound a little bit weird because I was like, oh yeah, cry me a river. But she goes, there have been many times that I wish that we didn't win. She goes, there's been many times, I know, I thought the same thing.
Yeah,
tough shit.
What the hell?
Well, this is what she said. She goes, there's been many times that I wish that, you know, it wasn't us.
Mm-hmm.
And she's lost a lot of friends over it.
Mm-hmm.
They started getting tons of mail in their mailbox about people from all around the world that wanted them to buy them a surgery or pay for this or pay for that. And then she said a lot of her friends apparently, you know, they would have conversations about life, and they go, oh, well, you don't know that because you don't have to struggle with money. You don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started to divide her friends, And then they showed a couple that they were used to be friends with, and she goes, yeah, I do feel like it's changed. She's like, they don't struggle with money, and I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, build an addition onto our house, and I'm trying to figure out how to get so-and-so into college. So they don't understand. They don't relate. And she goes, and I can't help but, like, think, why them, you know, and I'm very envious of it, and it is very challenging.
Yeah, it is. And I would imagine you lose some friends, or at least so-called friends.
But that's sad. That's like, it is
people
saying,
have that envy, you know, it's like, a destructive force.
And the lady said this, that one. She goes, she goes, I just did what everybody else did. I bought a ticket. That's all I did, as I bought a ticket, and it happened to be us.
Yeah.
She goes, all I did was buy a ticket. We're not any better than anyone else. We're not any more special. We just bought the ticket.
Yeah.
But the husband did say, he said that, living when he goes, they had to move out of their community, and they moved to a place where, you know, there's more money. So it's kind of like they moved into a different.
Yeah, because otherwise they moved to
Miami. So they're from like Midwest, because it's like, you know, you can have a nice house, a nice car, and it's like, or living out here, it's people aren't going to care, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're staying in a tiny town and you've got a Lamborghini or something, you know, people are going to be. And there are some people that one guy, he won so much money. His brother tried to have him killed.
Yeah.
He was given arsenic twice.
Really?
Almost died.
Wow.
I mean, he bought a...
People will do anything
for that
kind of
money. He bought a Learjet. He had a house built. He did all this crazy stuff, and now he's lost all his money.
Really?
But he said he hated the lottery. He said he thinks it was like the worst thing that happened to him.
Yeah, that's what some people say, you know. It's amazing because people are not equipped, you know, and we talked about this when it comes to celebrities, but people are not mentally equipped to deal with that kind of money and fame, you know. It's,
well, not everybody,
like,
but some people can. I think some people can manage certain aspects better than others. And one guy said, you know, taking a lot of money and dumping it on somebody just amplifies character defects. Mm. And I think it makes sense. It's like wherever you are now, if you were to boom instantly have like everything you wanted or all the opportunity in the world, I mean, where you are now in your character is just going to be amplified, you know.
Yeah.
So if you've got,
I don't think necessarily defects, but also qualities as well. I think that can bring out the qualities.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're a giver, then you're going to become a philanthropist.
Yeah, I mean, look at Oprah. I mean, she's got so much, and I think she's just one of the best examples of, she lives large, but she gives a lot. And I mean, she produces a lot, she multiplies a lot, she gives a lot, and she, you know, lives large, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that.
But, you know, sometimes I wonder, is it really noble for people with a lot of money to give out money? Because to them, it's not a big deal, you know? I'm thinking when you give, it's got to, like, hurt you.
you better
this,
be painful.
For this, yeah, for this
well,
to
it's
be,
not
like,
a sacrificial
really
giving.
Worthwhile.
Well,
know?
I think what it is that, first of all, I mean, according to what we believe, well, the Bible says if you do giving, don't flaunt it, and don't make it public. Do it because it's in your heart.
Right.
And people that I can't judge people because sometimes the limelight finds you and things you do. But if you're trying to get press out of it or something, it doesn't really. What does it mean, you know? But if you're just giving because it's something you feel is on your heart to give, you know, let it be just between you and the person or anonymous or whatever. It doesn't have to be something you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, sacrificial giving from somebody like Oprah, what does that look like?
Yeah.
Like, sacrificial giving for me or from you is going to be a lot easier for us to kind of dig into our pockets and it be, oh, this is really going to cost me
for
something.
For us, it would be easier?
No, I'm saying for us to get to a place of giving where it's actually going to cost us, it's quicker and easier. You know, like, oh, if I give somebody $20 right now, that's going to be a sacrificial giving for me.
Right.
Okay. For Oprah, who owns islands and things like that, sacrificially giving, she has so much to go around. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I kind of look at it like, you know, I think giving is good either way. You know, I think it's great either way. So whether it puts a hurting on her or not, I mean, I don't think like acting like she's, you know, the Messiah or like the biggest, you know, figure in the world.
But look, when you've got $100 million, it's easy to give away money, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, but that's why I'm saying I salute the people that don't have a lot of money that still give, you know, because then it really affects
it
their
is
lives,
a different,
you know?
It is a different place. Yeah. I think when,
you know, not to discount the rich people's philanthropy.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I totally agree with you. It's like when somebody gives out, and Jesus said that, he goes, you know, people that give out of their abundance is one thing, but giving out of your poverty is a total different thing.
Right.
And I think I agree with you on that. It's the people that give that can't, that aren't going to be paid back, that it really does hurt them.
Yeah.
But I think that has a more eternal effect in life versus, you know, just, but nonetheless, I mean, keep giving. I think it's, I think it's the way to live, you know. If you had billions of dollars, why not give it away, you know?
No, absolutely. Absolutely, I would.
Yeah.
Even if I had just a few million, I would.
Me too, yeah. Just you give know? It away.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously.
You don't need that much.
Mm-mm.
You really don't, you know? I mean, I wouldn't mind, like, you know, retiring with 50 million or something, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind either. That's no, nice. Huh? I think I could swing it. I think I could swing it. Yeah, but it was interesting, and there's a really great rapper named Drake, and he has his lyrics. He goes, it's funny how someone else's success brings pain,
mm-hmm.
and that when people are blessed or they get things in life, how, and it's miraculous. Let's say one person gets, like a good friend of mine, he had cancer in his 20s, back in Texas, and he's battled it, and he's been, you know, delivered from that, and he no longer has it in his body. Well, the same procedure that they did with him, which was some type of stem cell, it was a very progressive new thing that they did with him. They used all of his numbers and data to do the same procedure on someone else that he became friends with through this process, and that it didn't work on that person. And how hard that is for people sometimes when somebody gets healed miraculously or extravagantly and another person suffers, or somebody gets,
but you know, I mean, it's very natural to have envy, you know, towards people and stuff.
Well, and I think it's all a place to grow. I mean, it's in everybody. I can't say that I wouldn't have a sense of like, oh, what about me? But I think our job is to work through it. You know, I mean, you don't punish the person that got the blessing. You don't punish the person that won the lottery and hate them.
And besides, you know, I mean, when you envy someone, you don't really know what's behind the scenes. You know, maybe this person is miserable, you know. So just to envy their money and their wealth is not necessarily that. Everybody here is on a different journey, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you just have to be happy with your lot in life, you know.
Yeah.
Because envy, like, eats you up from inside, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think it's like another form of kind of like a spiritual cancer, you know, it kind of gets in there and then it turns into something deeper, and then bitterness is what you don't want. And so, like, I think that, you know, things happen for reasons that we may never get answers to, and you just got to keep trucking along. And I've heard it said, you know, like, comparison is the thief of joy.
Uh-huh.
It just does. When you are constantly comparing yourself or your assets or your past or whatever to someone else, you're not able to appreciate it be what you do have, because what you're doing is looking at what you don't have.
Right.
And it steals your joy. It steals your today.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, everyone is here on a different journey, and perhaps in your journey, a lot of money is not part of it, you know? And it doesn't matter how hard you try.
He looked at me when he said that. A lot of money is part of my journey.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. But it's not going to make it. I'm telling you, I'm ridiculously happy in life. I mean, I got days that are hard and stuff, just like everyone else, but I mean, you can't buy the kind of joy I have. You really can't.
Yeah.
I mean, don't
it's
get
funny,
me wrong.
The parking lot attendant always tells me, God, she's so full of joy, you know, she's always happy.
I do. I come in there, I'm singing, I'm dancing, I'm giving him a high five. He's really cool, though.
Yeah.
He's a hard worker.
Yeah, but you are, you know, you are
it's
mostly
the,
happy.
I'm telling you, it's totally the Lord. I can only say that God has allowed me to have a heart that I can just be happy. You know what I mean? I don't have much of an explanation. Really?
Yeah. Well, you know? Amen. Hallelujah.
Amen. Hallelujah.
So I got to tell you this one. The Mexican police arrested a man hiding 18 monkeys under his clothes at the airport.
Is this a joke?
18 monkeys. No, that's for real.
Who hides 18 monkeys?
I don't know. How can you?
I just don't. Wait, how did you think that was going to go down? How did you think you were going to get away with 18 monkeys?
I don't know. Even one under your shirt. And at first he put them in the suitcase, and then he was concerned that they'd be hurt by the X-ray machine, you know. So he just put them under his shirt.
Does he know what an X-ray machine does?
I don't know, man.
It looks through things.
This guy comes from South America somewhere, and then from Peru. And then he stopped in Mexico, I guess, maybe for a connecting flight or something. And they look and they see a bulge under his shirt.
What, did they ever find out?
Monkeys,
does it, does it say what he was going to do with it?
I'd probably sell it. He said they were pets that he paid $30 for, you know.
$30.
But they're protected endangered species. So,
I mean, what is the security dude that's scanning people do when he's like, sir, what's going on here? And looks, he's like, 18 freaking monkeys. Okay, I don't know how to handle this. according to my, you know, code, you know, security code stuff. Like, yeah. There's probably not a little subject that says, hey, in case somebody's smuggling 18 monkeys, this is what you do.
Yeah. I don't know. I've heard of gerbils up the ass, but I haven't heard of monkeys
That's
under
disgusting.
Your coat.
Oh. Well, who had time in their life to think about shoving a gerbil up their butt?
I don't know. It's probably like a...
How do you get out? How do you get that thing out?
It's probably just an urban legend or something. I don't think anybody ever did that. Do you?
I've just heard it. I'm just thinking like...
People do crazy shit, you know?
I don't even want to know all the crazy shit that's out there. I think the sexual side of people is the most scariest sometimes because I think that's where people have a lot of their secrets because people that just seem really like average, cool Joes. And then I've heard stories of, you know, get them in the bedroom and they just get weird.
Yeah. You know, I'm reading this book on how people make decisions and they show you how when people are aroused, their decisions are different, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And they asked them some things like, you know, would you have, would you give a woman a date rape drug or something, you know? And when people are just like sober and straight and stuff, you know, most said no. But then when they're aroused, most of them said yes, they would.
Well, how do they get these people aroused?
They have them take a Playboy into the bathroom and, you know, and then sit near a computer and find out what's going on and then ask them questions, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool book, actually.
Really? So when they're in an aroused state, sexually aroused, they make different decisions.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? It makes sense when you see all these politicians and you know, like a Tiger Woods or something making these kind of stupid decisions. It makes sense, you know, that, you know, just like when we say, you know, that men think with their dick, you know, and it's true. It's true, I think. When there's a lot of blood there, you know, it goes from your head to the other head.
Oh, okay,
you know?
Okay. I was like, don't get statistic on me. I was like, oh, okay. No, I mean, I think sexually, anytime you're in a state of lust where it's just, you know, you know, you're just, all you see is what you want.
Yeah, you do crazy things.
Yeah, I think people do crazy shit. It's just the process getting to that aroused place, like how many... Because you don't just go from 0 to 100. There's kind of a buildup that happens. It may be quicker for some people.
Yeah.
But there's a state where you go from being, you know, very level-headed, whatever that is for everyone to start off with. And then you kind of get a little further, and then you get a little further. And then the thought process along the way has to be like, not sure if this is a good decision. Ooh, there's going to be consequences. But then you're so focused in on the thing that you want. And
right.
And
then all reason goes out the window.
Yeah, but there's still like a process of which before it goes full-blown crazy, where they can make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do, you know? And then in other news, Lindsay Lohan is in jail, but they're only saying she'll be there about 14 days or so. So that's from a 90-day sentence.
Gosh, she got a good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
days.
I guess it is a misdemeanor. That's what they're saying, you know, this probation violation. So, yeah, but still, I guess she's in a 12-by-8 cell.
What is that? Is that the size of what?
Of her cell.
Yeah, but what does that look like?
12-by-8 is not very large. It's probably like twice the size of the stable or something, you know? It's not very large.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's fine. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, 12 feet is like the height of two people.
Okay.
You know, about.
Okay.
So that's not very large. And I guess 22 hours of the 24 she spends in the cell. She's denied access to the internet and cell phone, has to use generic grooming products, and is not allowed to smoke. Wow.
I thought you can smoke. They let you have smoke breaks.
I know. I would think so too, you know. But I guess today they don't let you. They take away a lot of freedom, so...
she can't use the internet?
They need to hurt you a little bit. No, she can't use the internet or cell phones or anything.
Don't they let them watch TV or something like that?
Yeah, they do watch TV. They say, oh, they watch I Love Lucy and Wheel of Fortune and all that stuff.
Oh, that sucks,
so,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
I don't know, yeah. You know, I mean, I sometimes wonder what I would do in jail, you know? I mean, what would you do? I get bored so quickly. That I would go out of my mind, you know.
Mm.
So that's why you gotta stay clean, man. Don't get in trouble.
Wow.
All right. Okay, Kira, it's that time again.
Okay. Well, Sam.
And so we're out of here. Stay tuned for Jenny of the Jungle, straight from Costa Rica, and I love that show. And everybody, be here with us tomorrow, cause we will be here. Take care and have a great day.
listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and originates from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. For questions regarding the show or to learn more about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondents to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.